Armored Penguins holds practices every Friday from 2 to 5 p.m. and every Sunday from 12 to 5 p.m. out on the library lawn on the corner of Magnolia and Palm. Last time I was on the show, I had a guest whose name is Caitlin, but she goes by Psy, that is her fighter name. And we talked a lot about our experiences with fighting, with how they were similar and how they differed from each other. And we also told stories about hanging out with other club members from Armored Penguins. And we also talked about just some tips or advice that we've come across from other people for fighting and just being part of the Bellegarth community. So it was a pretty fun show. This week, I will be talking about the Bokhtar and Cyprus weekend that we had March 25th, and I will be talking about Fool's Raid, which was the recent 3-day camping event, April 1st through the 3rd. I'll also be talking about Red Weapons, Scenario Battles, and just a bit about how one would kind of get established in Bellegarth. Just laying a few groundworks for who you are as a person in Bellegarth, really. So, first things first. Bokhtar and Cyprus. Bokhtar is a 15-year vet. I think I'm getting the numbers right, the years right. That's a really long time, 15 years. And he taught classes on body mechanics, feints, and setups, and as well as how to teach a class. And he also taught a class about tournaments, because at events there are usually a couple of tournaments people can join in, and they usually win. The prize is usually a belt flag that you can put on your belt, and it just shows that, hey, I did this thing and I was pretty good at this thing. Here is my reward for that. So he taught a class about tournaments, the mentality to have when you're getting ready for a tournament. So that was a really cool thing to learn. Also his class about how to teach. That was really helpful, especially if you're a new person who wants to learn by teaching others. And that's one of the things that we as a group talked about, how sometimes the person who is teaching you can learn from what you're doing. It's not a one-way street. It's usually a back and forth between teacher and student. So that's a fun thing about teaching, about Bellegarth, and about teaching this thing that we're doing. Cyprus, she's been fighting for 9 years? That's about right, 9 years. She is one of the founders of House Valkyries. House Valkyries is an all-female fighting house. It's just a group of women who've come together to support each other, whether it's fighting or just normal real-life stuff. It's not like a realm or a unit, really. It's like a club, pretty much. That's the best way to explain what a house is. But yeah, House Valkyries is an all-female fighting group. And Cyprus was one of the founders. The other founders that I know of are Acorn and Roka. They are twins, and they will be coming up later this month, actually. So that will be part two of House Valkyries Weekend. Cypress talked a lot about body mechanics and how it differs for females and males. Essentially, in females, there's a bunch of different things that are slightly different from how a male works when it comes to body mechanics and fighting. Males tend to have a wider fighting stance, because their center of gravity is higher up, unlike a female who has a lower center of gravity. So we don't need to have that big of a stance, and actually having a wider stance can sort of throw that off. And when a female's hands are slightly angled, like when you throw a punch, it's slightly angled instead of your fist being flat, and that affects how the sword looks when you're holding it, and it affects where it's gonna hit, essentially, because it's angled. So those were a few of the things that Cypress talked about in terms of body mechanics in the feints and setups class. Bakhtar taught us how to make it look like we're going one way or about to hit one way when we're really aiming to go a different way. So you want your opponent to think that you're doing one thing, but you're doing another in order to get them. This can be done in a variety of ways. It can just be done with simple hand movements, just like moving your arm to one side, but not really committing to the full swing. It could also be done by footwork or moving your body. What that means is kind of like jiggling your shoulders, really, but like really fast. Hard to explain, but think about a football player who's trying to juke another person trying to tackle them. That's really what he was trying to explain when we're working with using your body to feint. And you can incorporate hand, body, and footwork in order to fake someone out or set them up so that they aren't prepared for your next move. In the tournaments class, it was really mostly about your mentality. He was teaching us how to reach the right mindset in order to go into a tournament and not be so nervous. Kind of like how in our radio class, we learn how to take deep breaths before we start talking on air in order to calm us down. So that was one of the tips. He also suggested visualization, imagining yourself in a good position and thinking you can do this instead of, oh, I see this fighter is obviously a lot better than I am, I'm not gonna do well. So it's about throwing aside that kind of mentality and really boosting yourself in order to fight this tournament. And tournaments really aren't just about winning. A lot of people fight tournaments in order to learn from other fighters, especially since in tournaments you will fight people that you don't normally fight. And tournaments are the best way to learn what's up with your fighting technique, or to learn what you need to do when it comes to a certain type of fighting. Some people fight in similar ways, but that doesn't mean they're exactly the same. Phoenix Rising was April 1st to April 3rd. It was my first camping event, and it was interesting. I've heard a lot of stories about camping events, usually crazy stories. A lot of the people at camping events are much older than 21, so a lot of stuff goes on that can't be talked about, but yeah. I didn't really know what to expect from my first camping event, to be honest. I was kind of ambivalent about the weekend, but it turned out pretty okay. I mean, I did get hit in the face really hard, but it didn't ruin my weekend, really. I thought I broke my nose, to be honest. It was a slow building pain, and once it was there, it just went away, right? It went away fast. So it wasn't a lingering pain that went on for a while, which is good. I did feel a couple of headaches after a day or two, but I'm not sure that's really related to getting hit in the face really hard. I got to shadow Heralds during the event, which was a good learning experience for me because it allows me to really get used to the speed of fighting and really see where people tend to hit, especially for certain fighters. It's helpful to watch other people fight someone other than you, because other people will be able to find, it'll be a lot easier finding the weaknesses of other fighters when you watch other people than you fight the person you want to fight, really, if that makes sense. So heralding was fun. There are two styles of heralding. Passive heralding, which is basically the herald watching over the fight and calling things if they need to, but normally just letting the fighters call their shots and be honorable about their hits. The other style of heralding is aggressive heralding, which is what the herald says is law. If the herald sees that you didn't call a hit that should have been called, or that should have been a limb, they will say that's a limb, whatever. What they say is law. So if they say you're dead, you're dead, and that's the end of story. There's really not much arguing about it. And a lot of people don't like to do aggressive heralding because you can get on a lot of fighters' bad sides through that. So really the general consensus in Belagarth is be honorable. That way you don't get a herald on your back about it. Just call your shots and be a decent fighter, really. What else? Feast night. Feast night was pretty fun. At big events like Phoenix Rising, Poles Raid, feast night is usually the final night of fight or of the event. And it's when all the fighters come together and have a big feast. They eat, drink, they have fun. It's a giant party for people dressed like they're in medieval times and fight with foam sticks. So that's what Phoenix Rising has been. There's so many more stories I can tell, but I'm not sure that's appropriate for radio. So we'll take a break here. A reminder that you're listening to Armored Penguins with DJ Fighter here on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.org.
You almost, it may be, or she still always get me.
Hello everyone, welcome back from break. This is DJ Fighter. You are listening to Armored Penguins here on Penguin Radio. Red weapons are all the rage right now. There's a lot of talk going on about red weapons on Facebook, especially on the Bellegarde Confessions page, which is... It's like Post Secrets. If anyone has been on Post Secrets, it's just anonymous confessions about whatever's going on in someone's life. But Bellegarde is kind of specific to what's going on in Bellegarde around the country. And people can get pretty whiny and catty, just like people do on the internet. But it's sometimes really fun to just watch the drama unfold and just people being stupid and have all these dumb arguments. Sometimes there are genuinely funny things that get posted that are just meant to really just troll people and make them laugh, but not in an annoying way, like internet trolls sometimes happen to be. A lot of Bellegrim being people who play Bellegarde or are part of the Bellegarde community, find that the drama is amusing, and it's the point of talk and gossip around many groups, among many realms. Sometimes unfortunately, sometimes rightfully so. But the amount of complaining and whining about red weapons that has been going on within the Bellegarde community prompted a really big discussion about red weapons at Phoenix Rising. So this happened right before tournaments and after field fights at the hottest part of the day, and a bunch of people just got together, sat in a circle, and talked about red weapons, what their opinions. A lot of it had to do with safety concerns, because there are a few stupid people who will use their hands to block a red, and that's not a good idea, because red weapons are big weapons, they are dangerous weapons, they are heavy weapons, especially if swung really hard and really fast. They can break your fingers, especially if you're not wearing gloves. And a lot of the concern is that there are some red fighters who will unnecessarily crank up their shots if they suspect there are people not taking their shots, essentially sloughing their shots. And sloughing shots means not calling your hits, and it's kind of cheating, kind of not, because generally everyone sloughs shots, and it's a lot of noobs do it because they don't have the same shot calibration as vet fighters. Shot calibration just means the ability to call shots where they land and how hard they hit, and just being able to acknowledge where they're hitting and how hard they're hitting. That's what shot calibration is, and that's why new fighters aren't encouraged to wear armor, because wearing armor kind of dulls the feeling of the hit and can mess up your shot calibration. It can make you believe that you're alive when really you aren't. So that's one of the reasons why wearing armor is strongly advised against. Red Weapons just have a bad rep lately, mostly because there are many people who don't know how to fight a Red Weapon, and when they do fight a Red Weapon, they do it stupidly or they slough shots. They're basically not being an honorable fighter on purpose, because they don't want to lose to a Red Weapon. So yeah, that's the reason why this big Red discussion happened at Phoenix Rising, and the whole point of that discussion was to try and get this culture around Red Weapons to be safe. To, like, you don't want to break your toys. That's a really popular term in Belagarth. Not just Belagarth, but medieval combat societies, really. You don't want to break your toys, because then you don't have anyone to fight with. And that's no fun, especially if you like to fight a lot. So, yes, you're hitting people hard, but you don't want to break them, because you want people to fight with. And if you're not a nice fighter, people don't want to fight with you. People will just blow you off, really. And you can become isolated from a community that you don't want to be isolated from, really. Just a reminder, Red Weapons are weapons that are wielded with two hands. They have to be swung with two hands to count as a Red Weapon. And what really defines a Red Weapon is from a blue weapon being a one-handed weapon, is that a Red Weapon can break armor and shields. Blue weapons cannot break shields at all. Reds also cause 2 points of damage, meaning that if I were wearing armor to protect, let's say, my arm, if I got hit on that arm with the armor, the red would go through the armor and take that limb. So essentially, the armor did no good against the red. If a red weapon is swung with one hand, it counts as a blue weapon, and it means that the weapon cannot be used to break shields if you use it with one hand. There are a few people who fight single blue or sword and board with a red. Reds have to have a minimum length of 48 inches and a minimum weight of 24 ounces. There's also a max handle length of 18 inches or one-third the length of the overall weapon. It depends on whichever amount between the 18 or the one-third length is greater. The most common types of red weapons are a min red and a glaive. A min red is a red that's the minimum length required for a red to be classified as red, and it's the minimum weight that is needed to be classified as a red. So it's a minimum length of 48 inches and a minimum weight of 24 ounces. Sometimes a little over 24 ounces. Glaives are sometimes considered a type of polearm that usually range from 6 to 10 feet long. Polearms are weapons that have range and more handle and half padding than striking surface. Spears are another type of polearm, but I will not be talking about spears today. Because glaives can get really long, most glaives tend to be more handle and half padding than striking surface. And you can't hit anyone with half padding. It's not the same as a striking surface, and it will hurt more than the actual blade. But half padding is there and counts as striking surface because it's there just in case something bad happens. Because these weapons are so long, you're gonna have to have padding for most of it, because will be many times where you're not gonna be hitting anyone with the blade and you end up getting someone with the half padding. So it's good that the half padding is there just so that no one gets seriously injured. It's a precautionary measure just in case the handle hits someone, really. The other types of reds are long axes and hammers, though those aren't as common. There is a fighter who goes by Rao who uses a hammer, and he's pretty good with the hammer. I've seen him fight with it. It's pretty phenomenal. Oh. red weapons. There is this rule, mostly for armored penguins really, that noobs cannot pick up a red weapon right off the bat. This is because red weapons are long and they're heavy, heavier than a blue, and it takes a lot of dexterity and skill to properly fight with a red weapon without hurting anyone or yourself. I swung a Minred, I think, against a shield, and I didn't do it properly, and I ended up hurting my elbow. It wasn't too serious, but it did hurt, kind of like when you hit the funny bone weird and it kind of just tingles. That's what it felt like when I used that, when I swung that red. So yeah, unless you're being taught by someone, and the rule for armored penguins is Red Squad, so that is Cord, Mowgli, Ace, and Zale. They are the ones who teach you how to use a red weapon properly. And unless they approve of you using a red weapon, you can't pick up a red weapon and use it on the field. And this is, it's just a safety concern. It's a precautionary measure because, again, you don't want to break your toys. You want to be able to fight people and be able to fight them for a long time. Especially since if you're in an area that doesn't get much new people around and other members are getting older and sometimes moving away, sometimes just leaving. So that's why Armored Penguins has implemented that rule of not being able to pick up a red unless you've been fighting for a couple months. That's usually around like 6 to 5 months. And having Red Squad teach you how to use it. And it's a pretty good idea because Red Squad is good with red weapons. They're kind of becoming a phenomenon, I guess, in Belagarth. I don't, kind of iffy to say that because they're part of my realm, but Red Squad is great. They're fun people. This funny story from Phoenix Rising, because Red Squad kind of, red kind of rhymes with bread, and you could kind of mix it up. So at Phoenix Rising, they all got loaves of baguettes and brought it onto the field instead of using weapons. And they just fought a couple rounds using loaves of bread as their weapons. And going up to people and just yelling, bread, don't take it, bread, don't take it. Because of bread. Bread isn't an actual weapon and can't count for anything. And for quite a bit of time, you saw people just walking off the field with little pieces of bread that broke off on the baguette in their mouths, or fighting with bread in their mouths even though the bread has been on the ground for a while. That's kind of gross, but you know, Belagarth people don't care. So that was a funny event that occurred on the field. Red Squad. it's actually been like a long standing joke that started, I don't know, a couple months ago, maybe back before spring break, I know for sure. Just randomly popped up, and one of our vet fighters, Bogan, actually, I think either he started it or was just like, Red Squad, and that just became a thing after that. And I'm really glad they actually went through with that. There are pictures of it on Facebook. So yeah, it was a sight to see. Just a bunch of fighters being silly and not serious, which was good for that day because the red talk kind of got, I didn't stick around for most of it, but I did hear a bit of aftermath from a few people who are pretty just kind of not digging the whole thing and being kind of pissy about it. But yeah, that's some people just get way too heated up about something that's not really an issue. So, yeah. It was good to have Bread Squad on the field. Fighting with Bread. Being dumb. Yelling, Bread, don't take it. Bread, don't take it. Just a reminder, you're listening to Armored Penguins here on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. It's time for another break, so I'll be checking out.
Bloodstains won't make it, man, I got good things, got you. Hoops and everything, get back, never get back too soon. Are you lonely? Are you there when I'm not in the room? Are you only, only a part of this when you choose? Is it real? Is it something that you cannot touch? Do you feel? Do you feel that you feel too much? Bloodstains won't make it, man, I got good things, got you. Hoops and everything, get back, never get back too soon. Bloodstains make confusing patterns, they lead me to you. Hoops and everything, get back, never get back too soon. Something crazy, something changing in the way you talk. You were lately you were trying to be the one on top. Come on down, come on and give it to me like you should. Gonna drown, I give up and get on with it, life is good. It matter, got good things, got you. Hoops and everything, get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back. Get back, never get back. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back too soon. Yes, it's true.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, DJ Fighter, here on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. On previous shows, I've talked about different scenario battles. I've talked about Ditch, which is two teams on either side of the field, and they fight. And depending on whoever wins, a person will be switched from one side to another in order to even out the teams. Sometimes it doesn't always happen that way, but it usually does. I've also talked about escalation battles, where it is everyone starts out with, it's a ditch, but with extra rules. Everyone starts out with a single blue, and after however many deaths, it depends on the herald, a person can then upgrade to another weapon. They can pick up a sword, they can pick up a shield, they can pick up a glaive or a minred, they can pick up whatever they want. It just depends on how many deaths are required before you can upgrade to a weapon set, your preferred weapon set. So these are just a few escalation battles, and these are the most commonly run escalation battles, especially during practices and... Yeah, especially during practices, and it differs for events. Most events, there will be a different scenario battle than just ditch or escalation. Sometimes there's not even an escalation battle. Some people like to fight ditch for hours on end, and that can be fun sometimes. Sometimes we implement other scenario battles that are kind of like mini games, mini fighting games. We have all kinds of different type of scenario battles just because sometimes ditch gets boring and we want to just kind of add some pizzazz to the fighting to make it not boring or anything. Ditch is a little different from regular one side against the other battles in that depending on who died first in the last round of one side, or if one side just keeps losing a person or a couple of people from the side that keeps winning gets to move to the other side. That doesn't make any sense. So, to put it in simple terms, if one side is winning constantly, one or two people from that side that keeps winning gets moved to the losing side in order to help the losing side win a couple battles. And it just depends on... There are also factors to consider, such as the skill of whoever is entering the field to fight. That's essentially a ditch. Sometimes you just have field fights that don't have any moving of players, and you just keep winning or losing, depending on what side you're on. There are many other types of scenario battles at Raid of Skyreach, which happened... Wow, that was a few months ago. We did a scenario battle that was called Zombie Apocalypse, which is exactly what it sounds like. It was zombies versus humans. Zombies got a respawn of about 5 to 10 seconds, and the goal of the zombies was to kill all the humans and turn everyone into zombies. Also at Raid of Skyreach, there was a relic battle, which was a two-part battle which consisted of kind of like capture the flag, but instead of trying to capture a flag from another team, one team would be defending a port or storage area kind of thing, and the other team will be trying to move flags into this port. So that was the first half of the battle. You had to get three flags into the three ports, really. Then the next part, the second part of the battle, had to do with boats. And we had to carry these PVC structures, four people to a boat, to try and get it to the other side of the field, to another port, really. And the whole goal was to get it to the other port. You had to get at least half of the boats, or more than half of the boats, into the other port. But the rule was, if all four people to a boat died, it would take 10 seconds to destroy that boat. And four people had to hold... I forgot what the rule was, but I think it was four people of the enemy team had to hold the boat and wait 10 seconds in order for that boat to be destroyed. So that was one scenario battle. It's called a relic battle, and it can be done in a bunch of different ways, as I have been told, but that is the first relic battle that I was part of. There is another scenario battle called Valhalla. Valhalla usually starts out as a free-for-all, and then as people come to the respawn point when they die, they team up with another fighter and then jump back onto the field. Sometimes it usually starts out with a team of two, and then a team of three after however many deaths, and then a team of four. But it doesn't always happen that way. At March of the Penguins, Bogan was heralding during Valhalla, and we had a modgepodge of different teams as it got further and further into the Valhalla battles. And sometimes we had teams of three, sometimes we had teams of four, sometimes we had teams of five on the field. So it was all just a bunch of... It was a mixture of different groups, and it just depends on the marshal or the herald. This is also called tag team battles if you look it up on Geddon, which is the Belagarth wiki page. In Valhalla, a fighter can yell hero, which then allows that fighter to pop in the onto the field by themselves, sans a team, and try to kill as many people as they can without stopping. They have to constantly be running on the field and killing people, and as long as they have yelled hero and haven't died. It's a good scenario to practice fighting with other fighters, Valhalla. If you tend to stick with the same two or three fighters, it's just highly encouraged that you pick a different group of people every time you die and need to form a new team. Kill the Monarch is a scenario where one fighter on each side is declared a king, and the point is to keep the king alive as long as possible. If the king or monarch is killed on one side, then the game ends and you start a new round. We did this during German invasion, which was a couple weeks ago. It was actually really fun. Two kings on either side. And what happened was, one side, what was interesting about when you played it was, at one point, one side kept winning all the time, and then it would switch to the other side winning all the time. So it was a good kind of mixture. One side would be winning two or three rounds, and the other side would be winning two or three rounds. So it was pretty even. There is a similar scenario battle involving a monarch called Peasants versus Nobles. In Peasants versus Nobles, at least the way we played it when we did it that 4-1 Armored Penguins practice, is that there will be a king and the king will have two guards. The point for the monarch and the two guards was to fend everyone else off. And the point for everyone else was to kill the monarch and the two guards. It was also a free fall among the peasants. So, whichever peasant killed everyone, or the king, would become the king. We also have a scenario called Troll Battles. Troll battles start with all the weapons and shields piled into one pile in the center of the field. I don't think it has to be the center, but it usually is the center of the field. Then a person is designated the troll. The troll gets to choose a weapon and then this weapon is then called the troll weapon, and it counts. It's considered a black weapon, meaning the weapon kills in one hit. Doesn't matter where you hit, it kills in one hit. Like in Peasants versus Nobles, it's a free-for-all, as well as trying to kill the troll. Grappling is allowed, but only with the troll and the troll weapons, so you can't grapple with anyone else. If another player successfully comes into possession of the troll weapon, that fighter must drop all the other weapons on their person, and they get to use the troll weapon, but as long as they're not using any other weapons, just the troll weapon. All fighters who are not the troll can try to sneak up to the troll horde of weapons and grab a weapon from the pile. So that big pile in the center of the field is the troll treasure, and you have to try to steal a weapon from that treasure in order to kill everyone else and or the troll. One of my favorites, and this is the last scenario battle I'll be talking about since there are so many, but there are only so few that I can talk about, is the bear pit. In the bear pit, all the fighters form a circle, or a circle is made out of rope. Then two fighters fight in the middle of that circle. The way the bear pit starts is two fighters spar in the middle of the circle. Doesn't matter who, it's just chosen, whichever two fighters decides to be the first in the middle. Whoever dies in that fight must then join the other fighters surrounding the edge of the circle, and another fighter jumps in. And how another fighter jumps in into the circle is by roaring really loudly, like a bear. Whoever has the loudest roar gets to jump into the middle of the circle and fight the winner of the last fight. Fighters on the edge of the pit can kill fighters who are in the middle of the circle, meaning you can be a fighter on the edge of the circle and stick your sword out and just wait for one of the fighters who are in the middle of the circle run into your sword or your weapon. The point of the bear pit is to stay in as long as possible and for the other people to kill the one that is in the center, especially if the one in the center is a really good fighter. The reason why bear pits are one of my favorite scenario battles is because it isn't a large scale field battle and you get one-on-one spars with people in a kind of in a audienced way. I mean, I don't really like the audience, but I do like the one-on-one spars and the jumping in, kind of like fighting the other fighters for a spot in the circle. So that's just one of my favorite things about the bear pit. I just like to spar, and there's kind of this big ego boost when you can stay in the middle of the bear pit for more than a couple rounds. It means that you're doing good, and sometimes that's a good feeling, especially when you feel like you aren't doing so great. So that is bear pit, and there's actually a big story around bear pits that one of our community members, Juggernaut, has told. He tells every MoTap. But yeah, bear pits. So these are just a few scenario battles that I've personally been able to fight in. There are many scenario battles that are listed on the Belgarth wiki, geddon.org, geddon.org. It's a really great resource for anyone who just wants to read on Belgarth or monster races or people involved in the sport. It's time for another break, but when I come back, I will be talking about really how one gets established in Belgarth. Really. I'm DJ Fighter. You are listening to Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
Oh,
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So, how do you establish yourself in Bellegarth? One of the things really is perfect or honing your fighting skills. That's really one of the biggest things. I mean, because Bellegarth is a fighting sport. You don't always have to be a fighter, but that's one of the ways to kind of just get yourself known in Bellegarth. It's also being friendly, talking to as many people as you can, especially talking to vets, because vets have a lot of advice to give and they can be really helpful, and they can even just be people to be friends with and not just for the advice portion of it. Bellegarth is really like a family, or at least that's just how Norcalia is and what my experience has been so far with other people in Bellegarth. Yes, we have our disputes and everything, but we still try to look out for everyone, and that's really what I like about being on this part of the country with Bellegarth. It's, from what I've been told, it's a lot different than how it is on the East Coast, and how it's different from how it is in other parts of the country. So that's what I like about this part, about Norcalia, about Armored Penguins, is that we've kind of made it so that we're kind of this weird realm group on the West Coast that acts and feels a bit like family, a bit like a very close-knitted community. And it's so great to have that, because you have so many people to talk to about fighting, about stories vets have from past years of fighting. So yeah, it's great. Just talk to as many people as you can, vets and noobs, and learn, and just create a community. Add to the community, add good vibes to what this is, what Bellegarth, what Norcalia is. Another way to establish yourself in Bellegarth is garb. You want to have decent garb, because You're gonna get ragged on by other people. Mowgli got ragged on by Cheeseheart for having a t-shirt for garb at Battle for the Ring. And then Mowgli made his tunic, and it's a pretty good tunic. So you don't always have to listen to other people who are being garb. They're just being picky and nitpicky about garb and kind of being the gatekeepers of that. You don't really have to listen to that, but it would be a good idea to have pretty decent garb, like wrap pants and a tunic. That's really simple. For girls, you can just wear a tunic and wear leggings under that, because the tunic goes down, usually down to your mid-thigh. So tunics are pretty long. And you don't even have to wear pants, and that's especially helpful when it's summer and it's hot, and wearing wrap pants or string pants that just, yeah, it gets pretty hot. So wearing wrap pants, or I have these baggy pants that Pip made for me that are kind of like those really flowy dancer pants that you see sometimes. And those are all in black, and it's kind of heavy sometimes, and it gets so hot when you're wearing them, especially because I wear leggings under my pants, because I can't wear knee pads straight on my skin. My skin gets really irritated, so I wear leggings to kind of be that buffer between the knee pad and my skin. So yeah, having decent garb. Also, kind of figuring out who you are, if you want to do the role-playing aspect of Bellegarth. There are a few people who don't want to do that at all. It's totally fine, but a lot of established people in Belgarth, like really established people in Belgarth, have really good lore that pertains to their character, such as Cord, who has all this lore about being a goblin, and it's really interesting the way his lore connects with the lore from everyone else in our realm. For example, Mowgli's lore and Cord's lore. They intertwine because the story goes because Cord is a goblin and Mowgli is a hat troll. And in Belgarth, hat trolls are... It's hard to explain what hat trolls are, but just imagine a troll, but whose heart is in their head, really. So that's why they're hat trolls, because they wear hats on their head to protect their heart brain from the sun. So Cord found Mowgli squished under a rock, because that tends to happen with hat trolls. They can get squished by rocks, or they sometimes have cities built on top of them by goblins. But yeah, Cord found Mowgli squished under a rock and took Mowgli in, essentially, because Mowgli never knew his parents and his parents kind of just squished him under a rock. Sort of. Kind of. That's how the lore goes. But yeah, that's one way to be established in Belgarth. Having lore doesn't always have to be lore, and you don't always have to choose a race, because Belgarth, you have monster races, because Belgarth is inspired by Lord of the Rings. You have dwarves, you have elves and goblins, you have all types of mythical creatures and monsters. And right now in Belgarth, there's this big movement for monsters. It's one of the cool things to do right now, and monsters are in a long-standing war with pinkies, which are humans, or human-like people. And dwarves and elves would be considered pinkies, really. So that's kind of one way some people get established in Belgarth. Really, it's mostly about the fighting. Be a good fighter. Not even just a good fighter, be an honorable fighter. I oftentimes find people are more open or more likely to talk to honorable fighters, because you don't want to really know people or be involved with people who cheat in the sport. It's not fun. It's really frustrating sometimes. So yeah, be an honorable fighter. It doesn't really matter if you're good or not. And really talk to people. Talk to everyone. Learn from everyone. That's how you can be really involved and kind of established in Belgarth. So that's all for the show this week. Next week, actually tomorrow, I will be having Pip and Cord on the show at 6 to 7 p.m. as usual. And next week is my last show. I will be talking about sea trolls and monsters and all that fun role-playing stuff that I've been talking about all semester long and haven't really delved into. So that's what the last show will be tomorrow, 6 to 7 p.m. Pip and Cord will be on, and we'll just have a discussion like every other discussion about Belgarth. It'll be fun. So tune in tomorrow, 6 to 7 p.m. And tune in next week, next Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. for more Armored Penguins and Belgarth. I am your host, DJ Fighter. You're listening to Armored Penguins, Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
So different and so new, was like any other, until I kiss you, and then it happened. It took me by surprise. I knew that you felt it too. the look in your eyes, sweeter than wine.